This is episode 65, an oddball guy on the podium somewhere. Coming up this week, it's all about the track falling to pieces, strategy under the safety car, all your feedback, and only a little bit of Max. I have a request to make this week.
Anything, just name it.
I need this show to be shorter.
Why?
I'm catching up with my transcripts. Mm. And they're taking me forever because each show keeps getting longer and longer.
Okay, so longer the show, the longer the transcript takes, is it?
Yep.
And roughly how long does one take you?
For every 10 minutes, it takes me about an hour to transcribe.
Okay, so how short do you want to keep this episode?
10 minutes.
10 minutes for the Canadian Grand Prix?
Yeah.
You must be joking, woman.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Rubens Barrichello because Canada was actually the 257th GP start, so he has now officially broken the record, if you take out those race starts that were in question.
And that's discounting France and Spain in 2002 and also the San Marino GP in 94.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah, there's a great post on Blog F1 going into all the details about Rubens' various victories or non-victories, but we think he's definitely done it now, hasn't he?
He's done it now. So why did they celebrate it in Turkey?
I think Honda said it was something to do with logistics. It was easier to celebrate in Europe than it was all the way out in Canada.
Cheaters!
Yeah, they just made it up to suit their own marketing needs.
It's been a bad week for many teams as the FIA mandated the new style bridge wing needed to be stronger. Ahead of Canada, Red Bull, Toro Rosso, McLaren, Williams and Toyota all had to add in a little strut on the nose of their car to give the bridge wing a bit more strength and basically stop it wibbling about.
Wibbling about?
Yeah.
Feathering is probably the technical term you're looking for.
That's what Ron Dennis would say.
We still don't know who complained about this, do we? Because we know Renault always had a little strut over their wing, so it could have been them. They might have had something to gain from complaining, but Ferrari, they don't run it at all, so they'd have the most to gain, wouldn't they?
I know where my money is. It's been a good week for teams.
I thought it was a bad week for teams.
It's both.
Right.
It cancels each other out.
Okay.
It's been a good week for teams as new safety car rules are set to be tested at the French GP during Friday practice. The idea is that the standard ECU will be put to good use to monitor the speeds of the cars, thus eliminating the need to close the pit lane.
We were literally just discussing this on the blog before we started recording this show, weren't we?
Yep.
And the question is, why are they deciding to do a trial run of this during a race weekend? And is it because nobody's convinced it's going to work?
I've never seen them do a trial run of anything else before.
No, they do it on Friday.
Yeah.
So presumably they're going to have to manufacture some kind of racing scenario on a Friday practice.
Well, all the teams get together.
It seems a bit unfair.
Yeah.
Isn't it going to impinge on the normal Friday running?
Yeah.
What's going on? It all seems a bit chaotic. Isn't that what tests are for?
It's been a bad week for teams again.
They just don't know whether they're coming or going this week, do they?
No, because Bridgestone have said that they're not accepting any requests to delay the tyre warmers ban. The teams are citing safety as the reason, but Bridgestone Director of Motorsport Tyre Development, Hirohide Hamashima, said, "The real concern is minimum pressure. We suggest a minimum pressure to teams because we would like to keep tyres safe, but some teams will take a risk and cheat. Other teams are worried about that, so they would like to keep the tyre warmers."
Did he actually use the word cheat there?
He did, yeah.
And what was that guy's name again?
It was Hirohide Hamashima.
Oh, I thought it was something like that. It's interesting what he said about minimum tyre pressures. I don't know what stops teams from doing that now, even when they are using tyre warmers.
I don't see how it's related.
No.
But then I don't understand these things.
It's clear, though, that Bridgestone aren't paying any heed to the warnings that the teams are giving them about running these tyre blankets.
Well, I guess if the teams are ignoring them about the minimum pressures, they're just going to ignore the teams.
News and views.
Max Mosley is still in power, and we didn't do a special podcast.
It wasn't really worth it, was it? It was over very quickly.
Yeah, too quickly.
Almost the quickest decision the FIA have ever made, I think.
Slightly suspicious.
Bit of a bit of a quick chat. A couple of words were said, everybody voted, end of the day, everyone went for lunch.
All I can say is I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, it wasn't entirely unpredictable, as we alluded to on last week's show.
No, he seemed very confident, and obviously he had good reason to be.
It does mean there's a great big dark cloud hanging over the sport right now.
There's already talk of F1 splitting from the FIA, and the motoring bodies are running as far as they can.
ADAC want nothing to do with them anymore.
And why would they? And there's talk of a rival governing body being set up.
It could jeopardise the future of a number of Grand Prix as well.
In Germany, is it, I think?
I think the Nürburgring is under ADAC's control, so that might be in jeopardy.
And the problem is, it's spreading, because Lou pointed out on the blog that the whole thing was mentioned on Have I Got News For You?
Yes.
In fact, they talked about it for 5 minutes.
They did. Part of the research for this show, actually, we got to watch iPlayer.
Yeah.
Because you got to do research these things.
Got to watch telly to do research.
You don't want to miss anything, do you?
No. She was a bit concerned that the common perception is that Max Mosley is the boss of F1, but Jeremy Clarkson was hosting the show and he did clarify his actual job. It was quite funny though, so I don't think it was all that bad.
Really? Mm. I mean, it was funny, but you don't want Formula One.
I don't think that many people actually know who he really is. So.
No, I do get the impression that the guy's never going to leave his post though. He's going to be there till he dies now, isn't he?
I think the teams will probably agree with you because suddenly they're all started work on the Concorde Agreement again.
There's a lot of interest in it all of a sudden, isn't there? Mm. And it's been very quiet for a long time, and now that the teams have realised that Max isn't going anywhere, they're looking to cover their own backsides.
Autosport.com reported it as teams start work on new Concorde. I was like, what? I thought they'd retired that because it was dangerous.
Well, they do have the ability to do it. It's within their realm's possibility. They've got the aerospace knowledge. Mm-hmm. They've got the talent. They've got the money.
Best guys, haven't they?
New F1 Concorde.
It's almost as bad as the other Autosport headline when they reported the story that McLaren were being accused of setting up the Max Mosley revelations.
Yep.
That headline said, Ron Dennis denies involvement in the Mosley affair. Really freaked me out.
Qualifying.
I've decided that Canada is my new favourite racetrack.
Two races ago, Turkey was your favourite racetrack.
Yeah.
And what happened this week?
Marmot.
Right. I've never known you be so fickle about animals as you have been this week. How come marmots are suddenly so cute? They've been there every year in the past. Why have you suddenly picked them up this year?
Never noticed. They're so cute.
Really?
They're so fat.
Right.
And they run across the track funny. They like waddle.
They avoided any disaster this week.
They did. They kept out of the way.
And nobody got caught by them at all.
No, well, that's because Davidson wasn't there.
Was that what it was? And Ralph.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Canada also happens to be my new favourite track. I would like to be as fickle as you this week. You know why? Marshalls.
Ah, yes.
Massa. Anything else I need to say on that subject?
That was just ridiculous.
Massa had a problem in free practice too. His car came to a halt and the marshals tried to pull it off the track. And boy, did they try to pull it off the track. Forwards, backwards, left, right, nine-point turn.
The thing is, it was a small gap, but they got the angle completely wrong. So it was like a 3,000-point turn.
It was just embarrassing, wasn't it?
It really was.
To the point that Massa thought, stuff it, I'm just going to have to help you because you're going to wreck my car if I leave you to your own devices.
And apparently they knocked it against the barrier a little bit.
They bumped the back wing against the
barrier. If I was Ferrari, I'd have a word.
Send them the bill. They were a bit hopeless, but I enjoyed it very much. It was very amusing, if not slightly dangerous.
There were several funny Marshall incidents, but we'll talk about them in a minute. We do want to ask Drew. We mentioned him last week because he said he was a marshal.
Yes, he was at turn 7,
yeah.
If I recall.
We want to ask him what is going on.
We'd like his opinion.
Yeah. Yes,
if we could email you or if he's listening, if he could call in on the voicemail 012128-TRACK, give us his opinion on what you thought
was
going on.
Were they just having a bad day? Or?
Yeah, I don't think he was down there. I don't think it was his fault or anything doing, but I would like to know what he thought and what other marshals thought of it, because it was a bit embarrassing. It wasn't quite as bad as in Bahrain, when the marshal was just hopeless and not paying attention and not doing his job.
They weren't looking, no.
No, he was trying to do his job. And they were trying to do their best to get the car out of the way. They were just a little bit incompetent.
Need a bit more training.
Yeah, left, by the way. Left hand down will bring the car in, not the right hand down. That's what they got wrong.
Actually, my favourite Marshall clip was when Vettel was at the side of the road.
Free practice 3.
Yeah, and the Marshall had to get through the fence.
With his fire extinguisher.
Yeah, to come and get him. And he like tipped through the fence sideways and then fell down on the ground.
He threw himself out, I think because Vettel was in front of the Marshall post and he couldn't do his usual jump.
Mm.
So he sort of fell out backwards.
Yeah, he didn't want to crash onto the car.
No.
So he had to be a bit careful.
He looked a bit large as well.
It was funny.
He wasn't the smallest Marshall in the world and just sort of flopped out.
It's worth watching. We should put a clip on Dropio.
Yeah, because we didn't have any free practice 3 video, but Kathy did record a couple of moments for us.
Yeah.
And we should just take that little clip as he falls out of the fence in. And put it on Dropio so that everyone can see it, because it is hilarious. It's got to be seen to be believed. It's only about 3 seconds long, but I love it.
Vettel's incident was actually really scary because the rubber came off the wheel, flipped up in the air, almost went over the fence.
Yes. Didn't it happen in Monaco? The same thing happened to
Rosberg.
Yeah. The tethers kept the rim on the car, but now the rubber is flying off the rims.
Is that another safety issue?
That might be related to the low pressure that the Bridgestone guy was talking about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Maybe teams are running them under the recommended pressure, and they're flying off the rims in the instance of an accident.
Interesting. So that was all that was exciting in free practice. On to qualifying, and the track started falling apart.
It did, big time. Earlier in the weekend than in previous years. It always happens in Canada, or has done for the last couple of years, mostly because the Canadian weather is quite extreme in the winter.
Yeah, cold winters.
And very warm in the summer, and it plays havoc with asphalt. So they've had problems in the past. Also, the entire track is built on reclaimed land from the sea or from the river or the sea, wherever it is.
Right.
They've reconned, so it's not the most stable of land in the country anyway.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's a great place to hold a racetrack, yeah. Right? So they always have problems year after year, but this year it was more prominent because it happened earlier on the weekend. It happened on the Saturday, whereas normally it happens usually halfway through the race on the Sunday.
Well, I think the problem was they kept having to repair it, and obviously repairs are not as stable as a resurfacing job.
And they were falling to pieces left, right, and centre. Well, they were supposed to repair. They brought a specialist in this year, didn't they, to try and solve these problems, and I guess they weren't a specialist in Formula One tracks.
Made it worse.
Yeah, I don't know what they were a specialist in. Maybe woodwork.
It does mean that the front runners started coming out earlier in the qualifying sessions.
Unusually, Massa, he put in 11 laps in Q1.
11?
I know, when was the last time that happened? Unheard of, surely.
The BMWs didn't, they?
No, they were probably more confident. The BMWs had a better free practice 3.
They did.
Unusually, normally they hold back and run with heavy fuel through
Friday. Never really
Friday.
Tell, can you?
No, but this time they were on the pace almost immediately and right at the top of the time. So they were more confident in this track than anybody, I think.
Somebody who wasn't happy, either with the track or just generally, Trilli, he kept on spinning.
I 180 mean, like after 180, wasn't it?
Three times at least in qualifying.
Yes. Every time you looked at him, he was facing the wrong direction or trying to put his car around in the right direction.
He kept saving it, which is good.
Never met the wall, which was quite impressive the amount of times he did manage to throw it around. But not happy. No, and also, in the practice in the wet, he was utterly hopeless.
Yeah.
The car was really bad, so it was probably lucky that it was a dry qualifying for him.
Button had a rotten day, didn't he?
Didn't he? Did he get a single lap in?
I think he had 3 laps.
Yes.
And maybe one time that was really, really slow.
And then his gearbox just gave up on him.
Yeah, he had to go back to the pits. He was basically last in qualifying, except for Vettel, couldn't qualify.
He had an accident in FP3 and Toro Rosso couldn't fix his car in time for qualifying, so he had to sit it out.
Well, I'm thinking that they looked at Vettel's car and they looked at Bourdais' car because he also had a bit of a crash.
Mm.
And they decided that Bourdais was savable,
yep.
So they put all their effort into that instead.
Absolutely. It didn't do him much good either, though, let's be honest.
No.
He didn't do so well. So both of those guys, right at the back of the grid.
The gap between Alonso and Piquet has never been more obvious, has it?
Stunning. That was astonishing. The end of Q2, 11 tenths between them.
Yeah, Alonso was in 4th and Piquet was in 15th, which happens, but 11 tenths.
That is quite shocking.
Yeah.
Piquet not doing very well in qualifying. No. Webber, incidentally, who did get through Q2, did really well, and then binned it on the way back to the pits.
He did, yeah. So he couldn't take part in Quali 3.
No, he had to sit that one out, which is a bit of a shame, because he did really well, and I'm sure he would have done a great job had he got through to Q1. However, he was a victim of the track falling to pieces, just lost it. I watched the replay, I couldn't actually see how he managed to lose it. The car just seemed to disappear from under him.
He blamed the track, though, so definitely. It was good for Barrichello, because Barrichello got through to Q3.
Yes.
And it meant he was automatically in 9th.
Yeah, absolutely.
He didn't bother to go out and try any laps.
No.
Because he was in a Honda.
And it wasn't. It was a fluke he even got there, really, let's be honest. They probably ran out of tyres by the time he got to Q1. They had nothing left to give him.
No, but still good. Back to Renault briefly. I have noticed that the Renault mechanics, they like to laugh a lot.
At themselves?
Yeah, they're having a good time.
Yeah, you don't see them laughing too much at other people's misfortune, but when anything ever happens to them, they just crack up.
Specifically Piquet, but also when Alonso does something
wrong. You've got to have a good sense of humour to work for Renault, I think.
So we all thought that Kubica was going to get pole.
Oh, I did. I really did.
It was a really good lap. A little bit on the edge, you might say.
Yeah.
A little bit ragged.
Mm.
But then Hamilton came along and blitzed it by 7 tenths.
Where did he find that time?
Stunning.
Really
lap.
Impressive. Because the lap before, it wasn't that great. So I kind of discounted him before we put that one in. Out of nowhere. Brilliant.
So Kubica was in second, but Heidfeld, he was way down, like in 8th or something.
It looked like the top running teams ran a split strategy. Because you had Hamilton on pole and Kovalainen farther back. You had Kubica second, and then Heidfeld was way behind him.
Raikkonen up front, Massa further back.
So it looks like they had a couple of guys running at the front, and then they had a reserve driver who was running farther behind with a heavier fuel load, probably to cover themselves against safety cars and any kind of dramas within the race.
So post-qualifying, it's time for predictions. We had a voicemail from Jordan giving us his thoughts.
So my predictions are, I think, I think Montreal could be a wild race. Maybe like Monaco and maybe like last year. So anyway, my predictions, I think, is going to be Raikkonen on top. And then second, I'm going to put Robert Kubica with his string of good finishes. And for fourth and third place, I think I'm going to put Fernando Alonso, kind of a wild card, but I think he can maybe do it.
He didn't pick Hamilton, which is interesting considering how confident Hamilton was and how fast he was.
Yeah, maybe he assumed something would happen to him. Anyone else got any predictions? We had some on the blog, didn't we?
Yeah, on the blog, Felipe left his predictions. He said Kubica, Massa and Raikkonen, so also left out Hamilton. But everyone else, me and you included, had Hamilton in there.
For the win, in fact.
Yeah, it was basically Hamilton, Raikkonen and Kubica in some kind of order.
Yeah, I had Rosberg and so did Michael.
Mm.
He had him third and I had him second. Figuring there might be a bit of an oddball guy on the podium somewhere. Not that he's an oddball, but you know what I mean. No. A wild card is probably the word I was looking for there.
Understood.
Nico's an oddball. Oh, yeah. Great. I'm going to get into some trouble this week.
That's the title right there. Those are the predictions, and we'll be back after this short break with all the racing action and to find out whether we were right. If you miss any of the weekend's action from Free Practice 1 through to the Checkered Flag, tune into F1 Digest, dedicated daily coverage of all the on-track action, including the best bits from live commenting and all the reaction from teams and drivers. Visit sidepodcast.com to listen and subscribe.
The race.
The track had overnight repairs.
Yeah, you could call them the repairs. Bodge job would be a better way of describing it, I think.
They had a go.
Cement was poured into the cracks on the hairpin, and then it was brushed around a bit, and then hoovered up, and then put down again. Terrible, really. It looked a mess, didn't it? It looked absolutely awful down into that hairpin.
It looked terrible, and also on the formation laps, apparently the cars were told to avoid it.
Yeah, brilliant. Which is, what's the point of a sighter lap if it's not to have a look at the track? Oh no, avoid that bit, it's a bit dangerous.
But like one extra lap's going to make the difference when they're just about to do 70.
Yeah, at half speed as well.
Yeah.
It's not like they cane it around those laps. Not great, is it? I mean, it's just a terrible state of affairs for that track to be in. And there was doubts whether or not it would even hold up for the whole race. At one point, Alonso suggested they should run the whole race behind the safety car. That's how bad it was.
The race wasn't run behind the safety car, not for track reasons anyway, but Sutil was the first man to crash out and the safety car came out.
Yeah, after the last race, which was obviously the highlight of his season, did so well to run fourth. First man to crash.
Yeah, well, last race was highs and lows. This one, just the lows.
Just the lows for Sutil this week. Bit of a shame.
That was another Marshall thing, we think, because they looked at the car and they thought it was all right.
Yeah.
Then they went off and then it caught fire. So they had to run back with their extinguishers.
I think it was a bad call from the Marshalls because at first, from the mark camera angles, it looked like the car was off the racing line and out of the way.
Yeah.
And presumably they told Charlie Whiting, the race director, that it was fine and it wouldn't cause any problems. Then there was an overhead shot from the helicopter.
As it caught fire.
And the car was sort of halfway across the track.
Yeah.
And at which point the safety car was called. Once Charlie saw the state it was in,
yeah,
it was like, you can't leave it there for the race, can you? Get out of the way. So I think it was a bad call from the Marshalls again there.
PK did a questionable overtaking manoeuvre on Trulli.
I don't think it was questionable. I thought it was very clever.
I didn't really like it.
He used him as a bumper, but in a way that didn't break his car or Trulli's car.
Which is just lucky, I think. I don't think he cared.
It was a bit of a stock car move on him. He bumped wheel to wheel, didn't he? So the two tyres hit each other, slowed him down, knocked Trulli out of the way onto the dirty side of the track, but managed to gain PK the place. I thought it was quite smart, really. I bet he couldn't do it twice.
No, it was lucky and therefore a little bit reckless. I didn't really approve of that. Before the safety car came out, Raikkonen got the fastest lap of the whole race, which is quite impressive because he was knocked out after that.
Yeah, the track got worse and worse, didn't it? So that seemed likely. As soon as he got the fastest lap, I kind of thought that he might keep that for the remainder of the race. Although, a bit of a shame he never got a chance to try and beat it.
We'll come back to the pit lane crash that knocked Raikkonen out in a bit because we've got a voicemail on that.
Okay.
But first, I want to talk about Alonso. He thinks he had a bad strategy.
Yeah, I'd like to hear Pat Simmons' opinion on this, and I think the Renault podcast is going to be a must listen this week.
Yeah, Alonso says, I asked the team twice on the radio if they were sure that the strategy was the best, and they told me it was. When I saw Heidfeld was in front of our car, I realised I was right, it would have been better not to pit.
Yeah, he says he had as much fuel on board as Heidfeld, which was another 7 laps. Now, if that's true, Fernando Alonso did the best qualifying lap out there, even better than Hamilton's, because if he managed to end up in fourth place with the same amount of fuel on board as Heidfeld, that was a stunner of a lap.
Of course, because the BMW is faster.
Yeah.
And he was in
better car, more stable car, a car that really got on well with this track, and he was much farther ahead of him. He was really close, actually, to Kubica, who was obviously running light.
So Alonso thinks he would have won.
I don't think he would have won.
I don't think he would have got past Kubica.
The car was looking a handful, and they were having brake problems.
Yeah, he might have been on the podium if the brakes had held up.
Yeah, they weren't going to hold up, though, were they? Because we saw, I mean, obviously, PK had problems with his brakes.
Yeah.
And so he never...
And
he
we knew that was going to happen.
In free practice, was it PK managed something like 17 laps before his brakes burnt out?
Yeah, nowhere near a race distance.
He was coming down the final straight and he had to make a last-minute dash into the pit lane.
Yeah.
Turns out all his brakes were on fire. He had no brake pedal left. 17 laps. How the hell were either of those runners going to get to the end of the race? Never going to happen. So, no, Alonso had no chance of winning that race. Not a hope in heck.
Also, I think when he gets frustrated, then he makes some really stupid errors. And I don't know if this is because he thought he was in the right and was stuck behind Heidfeld, but he was desperate to get past.
Yeah.
And you could see it. And he made a mistake
and crashed out. Interestingly, he must be sick of the sight of the back of Heidfeld's car. Because the same thing happened in Monaco.
So he crashed into him then.
Got frustrated and made a silly move and made an error, which he put his hand up and said that was my fault. He hasn't done it this race. He got frustrated, you're right, behind Heidfeld, panicked, wanted to overtake him as soon as possible, knew his race was effectively over, and threw it off the road.
Seems to happen quite a lot.
More than in the past.
He gets quite frustrated.
Yeah, I guess the car's just hopeless and he's struggling with it. But he's doing his best. Clearly he's doing a lot better than his teammate.
So neither car finished, which is really bad for Renault.
What does that leave him on the points now? They are basically, they're in danger now of falling behind Honda.
Yeah.
And if Vettel does very well in France, they could fall behind Toro Rosso as well.
Mm.
Essentially only in front of Force India and Super Aguri.
They'd struggle to fall behind Super Aguri.
Yeah, they're guaranteed not to be last, but it's a woeful year for the Renault team, isn't it? What a come down.
Talking of Vettel, in the Vettel versus Bourdais thing.
Yeah, Vettel's getting the points.
Ugh.
He's doing the business.
Yeah.
It's Vettel's the man, isn't he?
I'm really upset with Bourdais. I don't heart him anymore.
Really?
No.
You are so fickle.
No, it's not.
I'm disappointed in you, Miss Blashford.
It's not just because he's doing badly. It's just that he doesn't seem to be even trying very hard. I mean, he probably is, I know, but it just seems like it's always going wrong and he always has an excuse and it's like, oh.
We've just had two races. Which on tracks that he knows, on tracks that he's won at in the past. Monaco, he won in Formula 3000, and Canada, he won in Champ Car, and he's failed to shine at either of those.
Yeah, this weekend he said he had the worst weekend of his whole career.
Ever.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad weekend.
Yeah. I mean, he did say that driving in Champ Car basically ruined it for him, because all the braking points are different and stuff.
Yeah.
But you've got to adapt.
I mean, the track, the thing is, he knows the corners. That's the important thing. Yeah. He knows which way it goes, and he knows what's coming up.
He's got an advantage on some people.
Absolutely.
We heard earlier Jordan's voicemail with his predictions, and he also left us a voicemail after the race, giving us some of his thoughts.
Long voicemail this, but we're going to split it up into a couple of little parts, because we do get sold off when we play long voicemails, but it's all good stuff. So it needs to be heard, but in little parts. So.
And we've got something to say about it in between. So.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, I'd like to start off with a good congratulations off to Robert Kubica and Nick Heidfeld and the whole BMW Sauber gang. They did an outstanding job finishing 1-2. The whole Sauber team winning the first race, Kubica's first win as a first Polish driver to ever be in F1 and to win a race. I think that's really cool. The whole team has emerged as a great team.
You know, you just said I was fickle.
Yeah, I do.
Well, the thing is, I quite like BMW now.
Right. That is very fickle.
Yeah, but it's not, because it was actually, I said this earlier in the week, but obviously no one heard it.
Right, you said it to me.
I did say it to you, didn't I?
I vaguely remember you saying something.
I said Kubica might be my new favourite. Not in an I heart kind of way, please note.
Right.
But
what with that haircut?
Yeah. Just I think he's really good. And then he won. And now it looks like I'm a glory seeker.
You are a glory seeker.
I'm not.
What, you just dropped the guy at the back? You dropped off your favourite list the guy who came last.
It just looks like that.
Added to your list the guy who came first.
It just looks that way.
Well,
it's circumstance, honestly.
Right. Well, I say congratulations to Kubica as well as Jordan, because it was a blinding drive, wasn't it?
As well as it was nice to see DC on the podium finishing third. And the reason I say this is because when you've been hearing from Red Bull, week in, week out, you've been hearing how great Mark Webber's been doing and, you know, he's been getting the points finishes. But I think, you know, DC showed, you know, he still has the F1 spirit in him. I mean, his 13 wins throughout his career, you know, he's a great driver. Used to be my favorite driver, like, way back when. But, you know, I still like him and admire him and, you know, happy to see him on the podium.
See, I was kind of thinking it should have been Webber on that podium, because he has been consistent in the points and therefore he deserves it.
DC needed it more, though.
Yeah, but he's a magnet for trouble.
Well, I think his advantage of this race, the thing that DC did, which he needs to do in every race, is keep the hell out of the way of everybody else.
He ran in a lot of clear air, didn't he?
He did. He ran in an awful lot of clear air, especially towards the end. No one was near him at any point on the track, and nobody came within a whisker of crashing into him. And then he got to the end of the race, and look where he ended up.
So maybe he does deserve it just for managing not to crash into anybody or have anybody crash into him.
I really liked in the press conference at the end that he was attentive to the other drivers talking. When Kubica was talking, he was listening.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've heard or seen a driver pay attention to another driver talking. Normally they're just fiddling with the microphone,
waiting for their turn to speak,
having a drink of squash and thinking, well, what I've got to say is far more important than the other guy. And of course I was paying attention. He was listening and he was tuned in, and I thought that was very good and unusual. And, you know,
it's refreshing to see all these different people in the press conference.
It was,
because
wasn't it?
Yeah. We're so used to seeing like Raikkonen's monotone and Hamilton with his starch white collars and stuff. And now we see these other people and how they react.
Yeah. That's very good. Fascinating. And it's also nice to see DC on the podium without a Superman suit.
Oh yeah, that's always good. Having said that, I was quite disappointed not to see anybody jump into a swimming pool naked.
Really? You look forward to that kind of
stuff.
That's
what a Red Bull podium means.
Yeah, I think we should hear more from Jordan.
As well as the incident on pit road, I was a little disappointed how Lou Hamm hit my favorite driver, Raikkonen. You know, I kind of am a little speechless and disappointed because I knew Raikkonen was my choice for the, you know, win. I had a feeling, you know, Raikkonen could probably win this race, and he said that too. And him getting taken out was a little disappointed from me, although it was an on-track incident. I would say, okay, it's a racing incident, but that was like a pit road kind of incident. So it's, you know, I kind of have to put some of the blame on Lewis Hamilton and as well on the team. They should be telling him, okay, the red light's out, and so he knows that.
I don't have too much to add to this, really. I think it was an incident.
Yeah, Kimi doesn't see it that way, does he?
No,
he's alluded to the fact that it could have been a choice that Hamilton made, a deliberate choice.
Yeah, he said Hamilton chose to crash into him. I don't know. It might be lost in translation, who knows?
There was a lot of people who jumped onto that, actually, as it happened on the live commenting thread. Everyone Punter, I think, was the first one to say, and then a lot of other people chipped in. If you have a 50-50 choice between hitting your nearest championship rival and another car, yeah, would you choose your nearest championship
but
rival?
But me and Kathy, we both think that he was just aiming for
the
gap.
Yeah, there
and
was
it
a
just
gap.
Happened yep. He couldn't turn it that
if
far.
If he'd have pulled that off, that would have been a stroke of genius because he might have had enough momentum for
to go around him.
Yeah, and if the light had changed, I mean, it wasn't that much later the light changed and they were able to continue. It's just so close. It's 50-50. I think you're probably right. I think Hamilton, it was just a bit of a mistake and he's going to pay for it because he gets a 10-place drop in France.
I'm curious why Raikkonen was investigated as well. Rosberg, Hamilton, you can understand because they crashed into the back of people.
It's probably just good practice to list everybody.
Well, then why wasn't Kubica?
Because
he was there.
Yeah, but he was undamaged. He was unscathed. Nothing wrong with his car. Whereas you had three other cars in pieces. So I guess it was the norm to investigate those cars in an incident.
Fair enough. Didn't you notice something about Kubica? He likes to wait at lights.
Oh, there was a little fact I dug up on the blog yesterday, I think it was. I forget. Our timescales are so messed up from a late race. I think it was yesterday. The fact that last year, under safety car rules, there was another problem where Massa and Fisichella jumped the red light again.
Yep.
This time they didn't crash into anybody, but they got black flagged. And whilst they were doing that, one driver didn't jump the lights, and that was Kubica.
He was waiting at the red light like a good boy.
Yeah, he stayed put. So there's 2 years in a row he stayed put. Sadly, last year, as he sat patiently waiting, Trulli went past him in the pits. And then a couple of laps later, Kubica clipped the back of Trulli, bounced off a couple of walls, and had a massive accident.
So he's quite brave this time then.
He must have been panicking as he pulled up to that red light. I thought, oh my God, who am I going to hit in 2 laps time now?
2 laps and that's it.
I really do think we were robbed of a good battle out of the pit lane there. Because you had two drivers side by side, both battling for the lead to outdrag each other as soon as the lights changed. That would have been great to watch those reactions. And we just missed out. We'll never know what happened. And also the thing that's really annoying, is we have no idea how much fuel any of those guys were actually carrying in qualifying.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a fab lap from Lewis, but we'll never quite know how great it was.
I think I'm losing my voice. So we better have one more from Jordan just to save me while I get a drink.
I think it was pretty cool to see Barrichello running up front again. That was pretty cool on the live commenting at Barrichello bus. That's pretty funny. Good to see Barrichello. It was interesting to see how Vettel was really holding up Covey. I think Covey's really been the shadow of McLaren, like I've said before. And it's, you know, I really admire the guy. And hopefully, I wouldn't mind seeing him get a win this season. I think he does deserve it a lot. Yeah, so that's kind of like my race review. And you guys are doing a great job, so keep up the good work. And yeah, I can't wait for the French Grand Prix.
Just to clarify the Barrichello bus thing, we were trying to think of a new name because the Trulli train doesn't work so well when it's a Honda. So I came up with the Barrichello bus. Poppy said the Barrichello barricade. We're still trying to figure it out.
I think now is a good time to mention how great the comments were this week.
Mm.
They were absolutely fantastic.
They get better and better every week.
Jordan joined us and so many people were on there and we had such good input from so many people. Really, really, really appreciate all of that.
We didn't quite get to 1,000 like I wanted.
We didn't. But then again, it was on later in the evening, and there was less time. People went to bed soon afterwards.
Yeah, that's
people
true.
People were tired, so it was in different time zones. I'm sure at some point we will, but regardless of the fact, I mean, if the comments get better, it doesn't matter if they get smaller, does it, really?
Quality over quantity. There was, during this race, the ultimate Trulli train when he was leading, so everyone was behind him. I thought that was quite amusing.
You took a screenshot of that, didn't
you? Yeah, I did.
You were really happy. They weren't actually queued up behind him, though.
Well, no, but...
It looked quite
sweet. You could say everyone was behind Trilly.
They were. It's true. Yeah, that's true. And he led a race, which is very unusual. And a couple of people did.
There were tons of leaders.
Glock led a race. Barrichello led a race. Mm. Lots of good. It's good to see that happen every now and then.
Yeah, I just want to point out that it took me a couple of years when I first started watching to understand the whole pit stop thing, like, you know, two stops versus one stopping and, you know, right, the kind okay. of strategy
people
things.
On different strategies, somebody being in front, but then they may be in the lead, but they're not actually leading the Grand Prix, that thing, right?
Well, now I've figured out why it took me so long, because race, James Allen was like, Barrichello hasn't won a race in so long, he's leading, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
But we all knew that he hadn't pitted yet, so it was Kubica we were looking at.
Absolutely. So you're blaming it all on James Allen.
What? Commentators.
Yes. Okay.
Commentators in general.
Your misunderstanding of Formula One can be attributed to one man.
I didn't say that. There was loads of good overtaking today, wasn't there?
Considering how bad this track is, considering the state of it, considering that going offline is so dangerous and can lead to so many problems, I thought Massa did a sterling job.
My favourite overtaking move ever.
When he overtook Kovalainen and Rubens Barrichello at the hairpin.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that.
Well, they just went wide and he undercut them and just really tight corner.
He
and
so
just
much
went straight off.
Speed on that line. I don't know why he didn't do it every lap. Just go over the grass.
It's interesting because the Ferraris seem to be struggling getting traction out of corners.
Yeah. And that was the answer.
He did it that time.
I wish he'd figured that out in qualifying. He just hooked up on the curb, on the grass of the curb, and pulled himself around and hauled his ass up that hill.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And leave the other two cars, they were just left for
behind.
Dead.
It was great. And you know what? I've had to take Massa out of my bad books now.
Why?
Because he's been really, really good.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
These
Look
past
where he is
few
in the championship, considering
amazing.
The start of the season.
And he actually spoke to Martin Brundle on the gridwalk when no one else would.
That's true.
I hate the gridwalk. Yeah, it's really embarrassing.
A big aww.
But that was quite nice because no one would speak to him.
No. And Martin said, I'm determined to find somebody. I'm going to find a driver to talk to me on the grid. And you're thinking, you're not. No one's interested.
No one wants to talk about this track, trust me.
I think it says a lot about Massa's new psyche and his state of mind this year, because he was so comfortable, whereas everybody else, they were putting their helmets on and they were worried about the track and they were thinking about what was going on ahead. Just looked absolutely chilled out,
leaning on the wall. He's like, yeah, come talk to me, whatever.
Yeah, he wasn't panicked, he wasn't in a rush, and that seems unusual from him. That's impressive. I would be worried if I was Lewis Hamilton and I was looking at Kimi Raikkonen as my nearest championship rival. I'd be worried, and now looking over my shoulder at Massa too, because that's a different Massa this year.
At the end of the live comments, you asked whether Monaco or Canada was better.
Yes.
The general consensus, me included, is that Monaco was the best.
I prefer this race.
No, you're wrong.
I like it when the two championship leaders are out of the race and somebody else gets a go. I mean, I know it's not the racing it is best, and I appreciate there wasn't that much overtaking, but I thought this was a better race. I thought qualifying was really exciting this weekend, and I thought the race was really dramatic. I wanted to say just one thing for Nick Heidfeld, who we haven't really mentioned. Didn't have the ideal strategy, didn't qualify that well, still has problems warming up his tyres, was way behind his teammate on a different strategy, was in the lead, having completed all his pit stops at one point, and he had to let his teammate go, and he didn't get the win. I do feel slightly sorry for him.
I think Kubica would have got past him anyway.
Presumably he was asked to let the guy go, or he did the right thing and let the guy go, which was the sensible thing to do, because he didn't know what was going to happen the rest of the race. Another safety car, if a safety car come out at any point after that, Kubica's lead and advantage would have been squandered.
Yep.
And Nick didn't know that wasn't going to happen. However, I don't know. I'd just be gutted if I was him.
Yeah, I mean, he's just sad that he wanted to get BMW's first win.
Yeah.
Because he's been in it forever.
Absolutely. And he's a good driver and he deserves to be a winner. And it's yet to happen. I hope the next time that he gets the better strategy of the two. And I hope he sorts out his qualifying tyre problem.
So in fantasy races, I am about the same, 109th. You know, I think I might have dropped a couple of places.
Mm.
You are fast becoming as bad as me.
I'll tell you something, and I have to make an apology to everybody who's taken any effort to put anything into fantasy races since we started doing this. We haven't done a very good job of reminding people to pick their teams.
That's because we keep forgetting as well.
We do keep forgetting ourselves. We should put a reminder in the comments or on the blog or somewhere on a Thursday or Friday prior to the race. It was more difficult this week because it was later, and therefore the cutoff point was after free practice one.
Yeah.
And I think Bigotes came along and reminded us the cutoff point.
And
we're like, ah, shoot. And I'm not sure he didn't. That wasn't tactical. I'm not sure he didn't do that on purpose, Mr. Bigotes. We're watching you. So we've got to do a reminder before the next race.
I'll take that on board and do a reminder.
Brilliant. So that everyone gets a chance to redo their fantasy racer team. Because I had the wrong guys. I didn't want those guys. And I suffered for it. And I blame that
Any
on my poor
excuse. The fact that I'm in 109th, which you would expect because I am rubbish.
Yep.
You're in 97th.
Lou's beating us.
Yes, she's beating us.
She has been behind you for the whole of the season, always a place behind you, almost picking identical teams to you in some cases. Yep. And now she's jumped ahead. I feel bad for me.
Not me, then.
Well, no, I expect you to be useless. What about me?
Okay. In fifth place, Team Dank with 3,283 points. In fourth, Night Racers with 3,302. In third, NG Racing, 3,330. Second is Fledglings with 3,392. And taking the top spot, Scuderia Bigotes with 3,414.
I told you it was strategic. It was tactical. He's only there. He's cheating. He's not cheating. He didn't tell us. I'm not having it. I'll tell you, I'm not having that. He can't believe he's number one.
The top three keep switching around. It's quite a close competition.
Oh, Bigotes, you're winding me up.
The biggest faller was Craig Blog Racing, who dropped 30 places.
Craig.
And the biggest climber, this is fascinating, Racing for Last, which is Steve in the UK's team, who is racing for last.
He joined three races into the championship season.
He went up 42 places.
Oh, my Lord.
He got the second highest amount of points.
Really?
Yeah.
Good Lord, where does he sit
there? That doesn't sound like someone racing for last to me.
It doesn't, does it? Wow, he was on a bike ride this week, wasn't he? So he didn't catch the race.
Yeah.
But when he gets back, presumably when his legs have recovered,
he's going to be chuffed with that.
He's going to be chuffed. I don't know where he came in the charity bike ride. I don't think he's let us know yet. But as soon as he does, wow, what a present that's going to be. It's all good karma, you see.
The highest number of points was Jordan F1, who got 760, which is a massive amount.
Wow, well done, John.
And the lowest was a joint effort, Jam Motorsport and Chassis Mutt. They got 117 points. According to Daniel Galloway and his fabulous stats, the best team to have was Kubica, Glock, Coulthard, Trulli and Heidfeld, which would have given you 800 points. So Jordan was pretty close to that.
That is pretty close.
And I've uploaded the latest efficiency chart onto Dropio.
Yep.
Kubica is still king, with Heidfeld close behind him. Trulli is doing well, and Glock has improved immensely.
That would make sense after this race, yep.
Feedback. Remember last week we were talking about the fun game, you know you're an F1 fan when?
Yeah, Dan's game. Yeah.
So you basically just finish the sentence with something amusing.
Okay.
We've had a few more. There Brilliant. Was one that wasn't on Facebook. Stephen Roy said, you know you're an F1 fan when you brake as late as possible for a 30 miles per hour sign, so you hit the speed limit at exactly 30, and then look for a pit lane speed limiter switch on your steering wheel.
I do that, except for the pit lane.
You look for a switch.
No, I don't do that bit, but I do the brake as late as you possibly can, so you exactly hit 30 on
How
the
How do you
30.
Know?
Watch the speed limit. Well, the speed dial.
But there's no line across the road or anything.
You know where the sign is, don't you?
Yeah.
Like either side of peripheral vision whilst watching the speedo. Not paying much attention actually to the road, probably. Mm. Just looking at the speedo and left and right.
On Facebook, Daniel Hannanin said, you know you're an F1 fan when you add a team's name into your own child's name.
Right.
My newest son's name is Logan Lloyd McLaren Hannanin.
No.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Middle name McLaren.
And Jordan Allen left one saying, you know you're an F1 fan when you name your daughter after an F1 engine, Mercedes, and you name your son after a team, Jordan. Hey, wait a minute.
Dad!
I don't really want to read this next one.
Is it funny?
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Say it quickly.
Paul Vincent, he said, you know you're an F1 fan when you find yourself talking about and maybe even watching a sex video of a 68-year-old man with five prostitutes. That's a good point.
Yeah. Well made.
I just don't want to remember things like that.
No, it's a good point.
Dan Brunel, he who started the game, he said, you know you're an F1 fan when you've seen more videos of Max with his pants on than off.
Yeah.
Because everyone who isn't
with his pants off.
Yeah. And Cesar Castillo, he left the best one. You know you're an F1 fan when you buy an iPod just because you found SidePodcast.com.
Aww. Yay. That's too kind.
Yeah. Scott Woodwiss went to the Renault World Series at Silverstone yesterday.
He missed the race.
I know, it's terrible.
It does annoy me that they run these Renault World Series on a Formula One weekend, because I want to go.
You'd think Renault would know better.
It's annoying. It's a free entry, and I'd really like to go. And last time it was sometime before the Monza, or on the weekend of the Italian Grand Prix or something. We couldn't go to that one. We can't go to this one. It's just frustrating. Silly.
He sent us his story, though, because we couldn't be there, and also some pictures. So keep your eye on the Enhanced podcast
this
for some of the photos.
This is going to be a long story, isn't it? Shall I make myself comfortable?
It's quite long, yeah.
Okay.
We arrived at the circuit about 9:30 and managed to grab seats in the grandstand at the beginning of the pit straight to watch the last half of the morning's Clio Cup race. They race Clios.
They race anything with a Renault badge on it. They're front-wheel drive, though, aren't they? That must be a weird race.
Yeah. The weather was just perfect. Blue sky, sunshine and temperatures in the low 20s. Afterwards, we saw the historic Renault race cars. The exhibition consisted of a 1983 Renault Turbo F1 car, a Renault Alpine Le Mans car, two R5 Maxi Turbo rally cars, a Spider and an old Formula Renault car. I particularly enjoyed the turbo F1 Renault. The sound was just awesome.
Nice one.
We decided to head over the Pitt Street Bridge.
I'm amazed that that's still standing. It was rotten last time we went over it.
Yeah, it was gross.
Manky.
Mm. And into the paddock to see what was about. We started by walking past the trailers and team awnings of the Formula Renault teams, then moved on to the main paddock area where we found the ING Renault F1 team stand with two R27s.
Nice.
One was up on jacks with the wheels and bodywork off, and the other was just on static display. A great chance to see what's under the skin of an F1 car close up. After some more walking around the safety and design area...
And if you're watching this on your iPod or on iTunes, you'll see the crash test dummies, who are quite yellow.
Yeah, he sent us a picture of live people dressed as crash test dummies. Quite amusing. I loved it. It was off to the grandstand inside Cops Corner to see the first of the F1 demonstrations. Romain Grosjean was driving today, and he did 4 or 5 laps before stopping on the pit street for some donuts.
That must have stank. Imagine that burning rubber.
Scott then tells us all about the actual World Series event, but, you know, I kind of just wanted to look at the live crash test dummies after that.
They're very cute, but just a bit bright, I say. You wouldn't miss them on a dark night, would you?
He finished by saying, if you do get the chance to go next year, I definitely do recommend attending the World Series events. Top class racing plus 2 F1 demos and also grandstand seats all for free.
Kind of depends on what day it's on, let's be honest. Probably a Sunday, probably when there's a race on.
It's free and you're still not happy. What more do you want?
Yeah, that's true. Everything, I want it all.
Scott was a bit wonderful, though, and he left us a voicemail from the track.
Now, this is pretty amazing because we asked for people to phone us up and give us Formula One engine sounds on the voicemail about a year ago.
Yeah, it was ages ago. It was when we first got our voicemail.
Yeah, haven't mentioned it since.
No.
It's got one hell of a memory on that kid.
Hi, guys. It's Scott here. I'm at the World Series event, Renault World Series event. The F1 car's now on track. And coming down the front straight, I think, I'm sat on the inside of Cops. Here comes, here's the Renault F1 car, and enjoy, here's the sound of the Renault F1, here it is.
I don't want to be rude, but that was a little bit James Allen.
Really?
It was a bit like, it's coming.
Oh, he started a bit soon. Yeah,
the Renault's coming.
And Kubica wins. Yeah.
I loved it though.
That was very good. Sounded good, didn't it?
Well, that's a wrap for our Canadian GP coverage.
I loved it, did you?
It was
not
brilliant.
The podcast, obviously. That would be ridiculous. I don't love our own podcast. I love the weekend. That's
yeah.
What I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and we were really grateful for all the voicemails and all the comments and emails and things. It's
live
brilliant.
Comment is brilliant.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Really makes the race. And also in Free Practice 3, when we had no television,
yeah,
we had no radio, thanks to BBC just messing us around. Live comment is all we had, and it was amazing. Yeah. Really, really appreciate
it. And Kathy as well.
Yeah, Kathy was on the video. She was the eyes.
Yes.
A couple of people, I think, had some visuals, but basically we were lost.
Yeah.
We would have been lost without live commentary. It was like going back to last year without it, so that was really appreciated and really nice.
We'll be back next week where there's not a race.
No. Nope.
Which is quite depressing.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll find something to talk about.
There's bound to be some Formula One news along the way. I tell you what I want to do, if you'll let us, it was such a nice refreshing change to hear the Polish national anthem played this week. Well, Robert Kubica, I think we should hear it again in celebration of his win.
Really?
99th Grand Prix winner, Robert Kubica. Yeah. Don't you think? Don't you want to hear it?
Okay.
End with the national anthem.
National anthems are so boring.